You are listening to KDOX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own unless otherwise stated and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDOX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today is our weekly wrap-up of the news events this week, as well as a preview of what I think will be the leading stories next week. One thing that I want to do is there's some additional information. Last show, there was a breaking news story of a shooting in Washington, D.C. that was in progress. We definitely did confirm that the woman was killed, and we have an identification. She was from Stamford, Connecticut, Miriam Carey, and she was a dental hygienist. She did have a small baby, and that was her, not a baby, but a toddler, an 18-month daughter that was in the car during this chase and apparently was depressed. After having a baby, you can get depressed post-pregnancy. Some women, not everybody, and apparently was and was having some mental issues, which, again, didn't surprise me. My speculation is usually in cases like this, they are either being treated for some mental problems or depressed and taking medication. We haven't gotten that information yet, but apparently she was depressed and her boyfriend was concerned about her, and we'll probably get more information as the day goes on. There's been some additional follow-up news reports, but not that much. I mean, I was reading just before going on the air a lengthy report in the New York Daily News that I added to my references in my notes. And for new listeners, the way you listen to the show is go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronk, P-R-O-N-K, pops, P-O-P-S, .wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll have links to the shows. Both the most recent ones are on the top, and then below that, you have a complete archive. And in my notes for each segment, I will have information pertaining to a segment or a news event that I'll be covering. Usually, it consists of photographs, videos, articles, as well as charts and tables, depending on the nature of the subject. Today, I normally cover and cannot cover is the Bureau of Labor Statistics unemployment report. And the reason why is the shutdown of the federal government. And I contend all along it's the Democratic Party that fully intend to shut down the government. And they made no bones about it, and they're succeeding. The reason I say that, the Republicans have passed four resolutions, continuing resolutions, in the House of Representatives that would keep the government open. First time they wanted defunded Obamacare, they backed off of that. The second resolution, they wanted individual mandate provisions of Obama delayed a year. And quite frankly, I thought the Democratic Party should have jumped on that. Because what we're hearing so far is the launch of Obamacare has not been successful. People are crashing the servers, so it tells me that this software was not tested. People that have got on the site have found that they enter the information and they're getting in loops. They'll be asking, for example, information regarding a password, and then when they try to log on, they're saying, well, the information you provide is the same, and they can't be the same for each field when they know they've actually had three distinct entries. So you have bugs in software, which you have all the time. I was a project manager for a software company, and one of my responsibilities was testing the software as a user, because I would go out and train users to use the software. But before we did that, especially if we had any changes, I would literally have to go through and this was a very big application, many times more complex than the websites for Obamacare. This was an ERP, Enterprise Resource Planning software, that companies use to manage their entire business operations. So you have a lot of dependencies. And because it's so huge, you literally have to keep on checking it, and checking it to make sure it's operating. And I would have, and it's not a, why it's somewhat interesting, it can be real tedious and boring because you literally have to test every screen, see if it's working properly, and can take a lot of time and effort, and it's not very exciting. And then you have to inform the software engineers what's not working. And something like Obamacare, in terms of its scope, you would have think they've really did a lot of software testing. It's apparent to me, just hearing some of the complaints, that they didn't really have enough time or resources to really check out the software. It shouldn't be doing this. When you're launching a site that's going to be visited by literally hundreds of thousands, millions of people, it needs to be thoroughly, completely debugged and tested and tested and tested. And you need to get users, actual users using it, not just internal. And you also need the hardware to keep the sites up. Because when you're going to get that much traffic, you better have a good-sized server farm to where you have duplicate copies of the site, you know, serving up the pages. So they're having a, what I would say, a very bad launch, or when they went live the first and people are complaining. And it's not, the proof's in the pudding. They need to enroll several million people in this. And why several million people who visit the site, very, very few people are signing up for the health insurance. You literally have thousands of people going for a state, for example, Connecticut. I was hearing reports that you had upwards of 25,000 people in a certain period of time, and only a little over 100 signed up. That's not very good. As a matter of fact, that's discouraging, because people are, unlike, for example, Apple with its iPad, people don't have to buy iPads. And if they have a bad experience with the hardware, with the software, they're going to complain, and they're not going to buy it. They buy it because they want something that works properly. Yes, you're going to have problems, but you need to correct them quickly. But the difference is, with Obamacare, you're forced to buy it, and you got to have your coverage by the first. Now, what's going to happen is people will, okay, they'll say, I'll wait a week or two or three or a month and then look at it again. Maybe they'll have the glitches cleaned up. Maybe they will. Maybe they'll just introduce more glitches. That's another problem. As one of the problems with software testing is, yes, as you test it, you like to get the error rates down. But what can happen is, instead of regressing to a lower number, you might be regressing to a higher number. In other words, as you make corrections, you're making more errors. It takes time, it takes effort, it takes resources, and you need skilled people doing it. So Obamacare is having a bad launch. Doesn't surprise me. What will surprise me is whether or not they'll get their act together by the 1st of January. Because that's the date where, if you don't have coverage from your employer, a group plan through your employer, you're going to have to buy a qualified plan. And that's one of the stories I went over this week that I'll touch upon. And you're going to get familiar with the metal plans, the bronze, the silver, the gold, and the platinum. Now, I'm not going to go over that again, but you need to start getting smart. You see, before I would go to this site and really, if I had to purchase it, I don't. But if you had to purchase it, I would get real smart on the various plans. Now, you're going to have to decide which one you want. The government is trying to force you to buy the silver plan. That's the takeaway I have from looking at their numbers, the details of the plan, as well as now keep in mind, the gold and platinum are better plans, are definitely better plans, because they cover a larger percent, but they're more expensive, significantly more expensive, and people will buy them. You know, people that have money will simply buy the best plan, or the next to the best. I don't recommend the bronze plan at all, because you have to meet a $5,000 deductible. Now, what they do is, it's a scheduled plan where, for example, doctor visits, well, they pay $60, but a typical doctor's visit could be twice that, could be more. It depends why you're going to the doctor. You know, it's different if you're going for an annual physical versus seeing a specialist on a medical condition you have. And the problem is you're going to have to pay, Bronze Plan will pay the first $60, but you're going to have to pay the balance. So you might think $60 is good, but it isn't. It's actually terrible. Because in Dallas, for example, you're definitely going to have to pay $60 or more. You know, I haven't been a fortunately, I haven't been a doctor in many years, but the last time I did go was for an annual physical, and I believe the charge was something like $125, and I had medical insurance, and it paid almost everything. But that's not the way these plans are set up, that the government is designed. You see, these are government design. When I say government design, the large insurance companies got together with the federal government, and they came up with these alternatives. And you're not going to see much difference, other than maybe service, between the carriers. These are very much standardized plans with certain things definitely included. So there's not going to be much competition, if any. The only really flexibility you have, and it's up to you to determine it, is which one you buy. See, what I'm trying to say is there are two problems with it. I might have certain needs that I want a certain type of plan. A better way to say it, I don't need coverage for certain things. I don't want to pay money for items that I know I won't need and don't want to pay for. So prior to this, I could go out and shop for a plan that I would try to tailor to my situation. Not only my medical situation as well as my financial situation. Not anymore. You're basically stuck with these four plans. And don't be fooled that there's competition, because every major carrier, the large group insurance companies that are selling this, are selling the same exact plan. That's not the way it used to be. You had a lot to choose from, and if you didn't like a carrier, you didn't like the service, you didn't like the premiums, you didn't like the plan, you could always switch. And see, that's what's missing from this situation. It's not going to do you much good to switch carriers, if you can, for the simple reason it's going to be the same plan, and there's not going to be much difference in the pricing. I suspect it's just going to be a few dollars, either more or less, between the carriers. So you're stuck. You have four plans. Now, if we had single payer, which is what President Obama wants and the Democratic Party wants, you'd really be stuck. You wouldn't have the choice, and the single payer would be the government. And that's what they want. I firmly believe they want Obamacare to fail. That's the dirty little secret. But before they move ahead, they don't have the votes for single payer. They could not get it passed, and I think they're under the delusion. I really think it is a delusion that when Obamacare fails, that they will say, "We know we told you so. That's why we wanted single payer." The problem with that scenario is the Americans will be so sick of the Democratic Party and Obamacare that they'll want no part of it. It's been described by Democratic senators and House of Representatives, Democrats, not Republicans, as a train wreck. And I believe it. You can get on the train and see the wreck firsthand and personal. Right now, you can't even get on the train. It's difficult to get that ticket. Yeah, there have been some people that have been successful navigating it. But the typical reaction that I'm hearing from people who have called in that have tried it is, and I'm not surprised about this, is sticker shock. They look at the price of the plans and they go, wait a minute, this is a lot more expensive than I thought it ever was going to be. It's more expensive than my existing plan, yet the coverage is not comparable. So I think over time what's going to happen, and I welcome this. See, I didn't go along with the Republicans delaying it. Now, it made sense to make that case. I'm not saying I could see their point of view, but it really was in the Democratic Party's interest to do that, not the Republicans. The Democrats should have said to the Republicans, listen, we're just not ready. We need another year. And the advantage of that would be another year would put it past the elections in 2014. And I thought that was both the political and economic smart move on the part of the Democrats, but they didn't bite. They were so focused on ramming this through to the American people, giving them, instead of waiting a year for the individual mandate to take place, they want to make sure that starting 1 January, you got to buy your insurance through one of these exchanges. Well, good luck. Hope the websites are working by then and you can get what you want. And this is where the whole house of cards is going to fall down, is the young people are simply not going to buy it. They're not going to enroll in the plan. And that is the one group that they have to get, because that's the one group that is mostly uninsured. And you got a couple of problems. The big one is you have high unemployment rates, and the young people are particularly hurt. They can't find their first job. So you have people that graduate from high school, graduate from college, especially college, where they've taken on tens of thousands of dollars of debt to pay for the bills to get a college degree, and then they find they simply cannot find their first job. Now, we don't know how the unemployment situation changed through September, and we probably won't know that until the government is open again, and it'll probably be a week, maybe 10 days, even when it opens up, before they issue the report. Because normally the report comes out on the first Friday of the month, which is today, which is the first Friday. But it's not coming out, so we don't know, can't talk about it. I suspect what's going to happen soon is the unemployment rates are going to start going back up. Yes, we had a good second quarter, but we don't know what the GDP is for the third quarter. Because overall, for the last year, the economy's growing below 2%, approximately 1.7%. Yes, some quarters it's higher, some quarters it's much lower. And the reason why that's bad, historically over many decades, the United States economy post-World War II has grown about between 3.3%. And that's just the average long-term trend. When you're in a recovery or expanding phase where you have positive growth in the real GDP, which is all the final goods and services produced in the United States, where you want positive growth, but when you're coming out of, you've already had a recession and now your economy is expanding, you want growth rates 4%, 5%, 6%, 7%. And the reason why, it takes those kinds of growth rates to really get the unemployment rate down. That's why these low growth rates are not good news for anyone looking for a job. It's not that there are always going to be jobs being advertised every day. There are people losing their jobs. There are people getting hired every day. The problem is when the economy is not growing at its average rate, but actually well below it, you're not going to get a net increase of employment. Another way to say that, you're going to have more and more people being unemployed for a longer period of time. And that's the situation. And who gets particularly hurt in this situation? It's primarily young people, teenagers, as well as people in their 20s that maybe they've never had a job or had really a part-time job, and now they're really looking for something permanent, something full-time. They're finished with high school, they're finished with college, and now they're looking for that first-time permanent job, and they're simply not finding it, because most of the jobs today, people are being hired, but it's mainly for part-time jobs. And that trend is continuing, and that's not good. And one of the reasons why is because of Obamacare. Because what's happening is small employers, I think, are waking up to the fact that Obamacare is more expensive, and they simply cannot buy it for their employees. So they're saying to their employees, you're on your own. You got to buy it on these exchanges. And that's what's happening. Instead of hiring people full-time, the normal situation, is most companies want to hire people full-time. They want to train them, and they want them to work at least 40 hours. Some companies want to work you 50 or 60. But when business is slow, you can forget about the overtime, the 50 or 60. And when you're not sure, depending on what goods or service you're selling, what the demand is going to be for your product, what do you do? A couple of things. One thing is you let people off, you lay people off. Second, you have some good people that you're lucky to keep, but you can't work them 40 hours. And because if you can get them under working 30 or less, actually 29 hours or less, you make some of your full-time people part-time. And then to the extent that you need more workers, you only hire part-time. And the part-time employees don't get health insurance. So the incentive is built into the situation where if I'm a small business owner, first I have to have some success to be able to even afford health care. I'm only going to provide it for my full-time employees and not provide it for my part-time employees. So I'm not going to be hiring many full-time employees. Yes, there are always going to be some employees in any business that you need full-time. And you couldn't get to work for you unless it's full-time. It's a function of what the business is. Other businesses, you have a lot of part-time workers, and that's sort of understood. Well, what most people want is a career. They want a full-time job. And it's not just to get the health insurance of their retirement. They need a full-time job. They need to work 40 hours or more to bring in a paycheck that can support themselves and their family. So when you have such a persistently high unemployment rate, over 7%, August it was 7.3%, and that's the so-called U3 rate. But keep in mind that U3 rate does not count discouraged workers. And those are people that are ready, willing to work, but for the last 4 weeks did not look for work. And the primary reason for it is not that they don't want a job. They still consider themselves unemployed. But they simply, in the past weeks, months, years, have sent out many resumes, filled out many applications, and because of the sheer number of people applying for a job, they can't even get an interview, and even if they get an interview, they're not hired, because why? The employer has the pick of the litter. It's very much a buyer's market. Now, it's going to vary from industry to industry, you know, business from business. You know, you're always going to find instances of some job being where you have a shortage. If you have that skill set, it can be a seller's market. But for most, not all, but for most jobs today, it's very much a buyer's market where the employer can literally have dozens of applicants. Now, he's not going to look. I know I've been a business owner, and most of my clients were business owners. They're not going to look. Let's say they get 150 resumes. They're not going to, you know, really in detail look at 150 resumes. They're going to quickly sort them out and usually typically interview maybe 3 or 4 people because they're busy. But they'll try to pick the best of that 3 or 4 people. They'll try to do initial screening, and invariably what happens, they know what they're looking for. They'll briefly and quickly go through those resumes and probably find as many as 10 that really meet all their qualifications. They'll throw the rest away or file it, but they usually throw them away in the wastebasket. And then out of those 10, they might invite for an interview 2 or 3. And based on the interview, they might hire 1. So your odds are very, very low to be hired. And that's why you have so many, literally millions of Americans leaving the labor force because they can't find jobs. And that is the principal reason the unemployment rates have been going down. It's not because we have more jobs. We're still over 2 million jobs less than the previous peak in November of 2007, and that's almost 6 years ago. And what you need to keep in mind, every month, without fail, between 130,000 to 150,000 people enter the labor market for the very first time. They're so-called new entrants. And that happens every month. That's due to the increase in the population. And yes, it's going to vary from month to month, but you need to provide at least that number of jobs to keep up with the growth in the population. And what's happened in the U.S. economy, we're barely at 180,000 jobs. If you look at the non-farm payroll numbers, they do fluctuate from month to month, but, and I might be a little bit high, but it's about 180,000. So as far as I'm concerned, 150,000 of that is just to keep up with population growth. You're not going to reduce the unemployment rate. You need 300,000 jobs being created minimum to reduce the unemployment rate by 0.1%. So even though I don't have the numbers for September that I normally would go over and see if we got good news, bad news, and a neutral, I haven't seen what I would call a gangbuster report, because really to significantly put a dent in the unemployment situation, the economy would need to be growing as a minimum somewhere between 3% and 4%. And if it were growing between 3% and 4%, then you would see in the monthly reports 300,000 plus jobs being created. And that's the minimum. And in past recoveries, we've had 400, 500, 600,000 jobs being created. But why? Because the economy's growing at 4, 5, 6, or even 7%. Now, you can't sustain those high growth rates forever, and that's usually for a couple of months or a couple of quarters. But once you have that economic, it's sort of like picking up steam, then you'll see the dramatic fall in the unemployment rate. You haven't seen that. What you've seen is, yes, the unemployment rate is below 8%, but almost all of that is really due to an increase in the number of discouraged workers, and you see that in the labor participation rate, which is at a 39-year low. Normally, it should be between 66 and 67%. That's the normal situation. We're down around 63.5%, and that's not good, because the only way, you know, the good news would be that the participation rate is back up to 66 and 67%, and the unemployment rate, we're creating 400,000 jobs a month, 500,000 jobs a month. We haven't seen that at all. You know, we might have had 1 month that we jumped up that high, if my recollection serves me. But usually it's under 200,000, under 200,000. Not every month, but the usual situation is definitely under 200,000. And that's not good. It's better than zero or negative numbers. I'd be the first one to say that. We're still having positive economic growth. The question is, how long is it going to last? And the fundamental problem, and this will be the story for the next 2 weeks, maybe longer, and there's really no way around this, is the federal government, whether it's under the Republican Party when they control the House, the Senate, and the presidency, or the Democratic Party when they control the House, the Senate, or the presidency, or where we have mixed control, where the House is controlled by the Republicans and the Senate is controlled by the Democrats, and the presidency is controlled, obviously, by Barack Obama, who's a Democrat. Under all three scenarios, or all three situations, we've had government spending in huge excess of what tax collections have been. And as a result, we've run these massive deficits for 5 years that are averaging about $1.2 trillion. You can't keep doing that year after year. And you might say, well, how does the government pay its bills? It goes into debt. It's like if you were an individual making $3,000 a month, but you spend twice as much, you spend $6,000, how do you pay your bills? You borrow the money. You get credit cards and you max them out. Well, that's what the government's doing, but it doesn't have a credit card. It's just selling more and more and more debt. It's treasury securities, treasury debt. It can be a bill, a note, or a bond, depending on the maturity or the time, the duration to maturity of the security. And that's what the Treasury Department does every business day. It has auctions where it sells debt. And you can go online and you can see what they're selling. The problem is more and more of that debt is being bought by our central bank, which is the Federal Reserve. And I have some statistics in an earlier show this week that shows who owns the federal debt. And what you see is a big chunk is owned by individuals and financial institutions, but a growing chunk is owned by the Federal Reserve. It's not that the Federal Reserve never owned debt. They usually did, but not to the extent and magnitude. It's unprecedented. And the only reason I bring this up and point it out, new debt that's being issued, the lion's share of that auction is being bought by the Federal Reserve. And this cannot continue. And they're honest about, we're buying $85 billion a month, a combination of Treasury securities, primarily bonds, and the bonds of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac that finance mortgages. That's what the Fed, it's no secret. They're telling you they're doing it. You know, the big argument last month was, is the Federal Reserve going to taper? By tapering, mean cut back on the amount of bonds each month it was going to buy. And so the question, A, are they going to taper, and then how much? Instead of $85 billion, they're going to buy only $75 billion. Well, if you do the math and multiply by 12, you get a good ballpark figure. The Fed is buying about over a trillion dollars, worth of Treasury securities and mortgage-backed securities from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Are they buying it directly from them? No, they're buying it through member banks. They're forcing commercial banks that are part of the Federal Reserve System to buy them with the understanding that they're immediately going to sell them to the Federal Reserve, and that's what's going on. Now, some of it is bought through primary security dealers in these securities. There, I believe last time I checked, 18. They're large investment bankers that make a market in Treasury securities because Treasury securities are a huge market. The largest in the world in terms of one type of asset because we have a lot of debt. In the United States, up to now, has been the reserve currency of the world. Now, what's happening is more and more countries are questioning that. And why? Because the United States, year in, year out, for 5 years, has been running deficits of over $1 trillion. And when you run a deficit where your spending exceeds your revenue, what do? You issue debt. So the big story in the next coming weeks is, when will Congress increase the debt ceiling? They will. They have to. You see, Congress is responsible for setting forth what the federal budget is of the United States. Yes, the president can propose a budget, but Congress, both the House and the Senate, can take it and throw it away. Think of the president's budget as a request, because it's the House where money bills must originate. In other words, tax bills as well as spending bills or appropriation bills. You have authorizations which put limits as to what's authorized, and then you have actual appropriation bills that fund those authorizations. And it's typically by department or by program. The problem is, while the House is controlled by the Republican Party, the Senate is controlled by the Democratic Party, and we have diametrically opposed views, political philosophies, ideologies as to where the country should go, where the Democrat wants to increase the size and the purpose of government, which means more and more spending and more taxes. That's what they want to do. They're not making any secret of that. And if they had the votes, they would do it. Believe me, if they had the votes, if they control the House and the Senate and the presidency, like they did in fiscal year 2009 and 10, they would go gangbusters. They would go on a massive spending increase, a spending spree. But they don't control the House. The Republicans do. The Republicans' problem is why they would like to, at least they say, they would like to decrease government spending and decrease taxes. And they can get that passed in the House. The Senate will never go along with it. So we in essence, have gridlock. We have a stalemate, an impasse, however you want to describe it. Some prefer gridlock, some say stalemate. Think of it as two diametrically opposed views of where government should go. After saying that, I'm a classical liberal for limited government. I really think the United States government is way, way too big. Massively too big. And it really needs to be cut in half in terms of its size. And I say that, you just look at what's happening. You can't keep running or spending more than $1 trillion 5 years in a row on average and expect you can continue doing it. You won't. We're already seeing the problem with that and the fact that the Federal Reserve has to be not the lender of last resort, but the purchaser of first resort of Treasury securities. They're enabling the federal government to finance itself. And the way to quickly understand that, every dollar that the United States spends today, a third of that must be 33 cents. Sometimes it's a little more than 33 cents, sometimes it's a little less. But approximately 33 cents must be financed. Only approximately two-thirds of total government spending is covered by tax revenue. The rest must be financed, which means the federal government, the Treasury Department, must issue Treasury securities. And that's why the national debt level has gone up, up, and up. No secret there. You keep spending more than you bring in, it has to go up. And that's why, ladies and gentlemen, the government will be open shortly and the national debt ceiling will be increased. The only debate is when. My bet is the government probably will be open sometime next week because the Treasury Secretary, assuming you believe what he says we're out of money. Come October 17th, we have to raise the debt ceiling. Now, what I said last show is that's simply not true because on average, the federal government currently is bringing in every month over $200 billion. Over $200 billion. Sometimes it's a lot more, sometimes it's a lot less, but the average is a little over $200 billion. I emphasize that because the interest on the debt is less than $35 billion. There is no way the United States is going to default on its debt. And I'm getting tired of listening to news commentators, Republicans and Democrats say, well, we can't default on the debt. Ladies and gentlemen, the United States, you can take it to the bank. Assuming you can take it to one that you're confident in. It's no way it's going to happen. Those are strictly scare tactics. What you're going to see starting this Sunday is you're going to see the Secretary of Treasury trying to scare people. He's going to go on the Sunday news talk shows, and try to scare you. the United States is going to default on the debt if we don't raise the debt ceiling. That is a bald-faced lie. And all the people interviewing him, the interviewer needs to say, excuse me, Mr. Secretary, but I understand, looking at your own reports, the MTS report, the monthly Treasury statement, that on average you bring in $200 billion, sometimes more, sometimes less, but on average $200 billion, and your interest on average is around $35 billion, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less. So if you pay out of the $200 million, if you pay, let's say it's $35 billion, that leaves you with $165 billion. You're not running out of money. You pay the interest first. There's no way you can default. Why are you scaring Americans into thinking you're going to default? See, this, and that needs to be asked and needs to be addressed. I am really tired with lazy, ignorant, uninformed, and frankly, a lot of them stupid interviewers that don't do their homework, don't dig into it. And we're going to see it, and they're going to let them get away with it. Most of them will. What needs to happen is we need leadership, both in the House, the Senate, and from the presidency. And I'm not seeing it. Given the nature and the urgency of the problem, we have a major deficit when it comes to leadership. We've got a lot of egos, and they have big heads, and they dig in their heels as they're taking the American economy into the toilet and flushing it. They are, both parties have been fiscally irresponsible. You can't sugarcoat it. That is a fact. Both when the Republicans control the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and when the Democrats control the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and when you get in a situation where one of the houses is controlled by the opposing party. And I have information on the past show that shows a nice chart as how the debt has gone up. And it's really taken off starting in around 2000. We're going on 13 years of a spending spree. And it's happened under Republicans, and it's happened under Democrats. No one has clean hands here. And there's really no sense of urgency to correct the problem. None. And the reason is very simple. We have really diametrically opposed parties in terms of their political philosophy and where they want to take America. And the American people are getting tired of it, outraged. They're beginning to wake up. And I really think both political parties are committing slowly political suicide. I say that because what's happening? More and more people are leaving both political parties. That's why the independent affiliation is growing, is the largest political affiliation. Now, what I think needs to be done is start a third party. And it's going to take 20 or 30 years to do it. But one of the principles of this third party will be all budgets will be balanced. All budgets, period. No exceptions. And we will budget, and that's point one. Point two, and this is equally important, we will budget to last year's tax collections. In other words, let's say we'll know the numbers sometime in mid-October when the government is open again and the Treasury Department publishes its MTS report. We'll know what the total revenues were for fiscal year 2013. Let's assume for a minute in round numbers, and I'm very close, it's about $2.6 trillion. That should be the maximum for the next year as to in terms of government spending. In other words, we budget not to estimate it or some projected number. We budget to what the federal government brought in the prior year. So what happens is when you get in a recession where tax revenues are down because people aren't working, you're not working, you're not paying income tax, you're not paying payroll taxes. And when a lot of people are not doing that, what happens to government revenues? They go down, way down. You know, this is the first year in many years it's been this high. So you budget to last year's revenues. You balance the budget and you budget to last year's revenues. Now, after saying that, let's say we had a party that could enforce that. Call it the Independent Party, the IP Party. And they have the votes. They control the House, they control the Senate, and they control the presidency. What would they need to do? They would need to cut federal spending by over $1 trillion, because we'll know in mid-October how much the federal government spent for fiscal year 2013. That number will be probably somewhere between $3.6 trillion to $3.8 trillion. You know, your guess is as good as mine, but that's is fairly close to where it's going to be. So you can do the math. That means the deficit is somewhere between $900 billion and $1 trillion. What I don't know, the Treasury Department knows this, by the way. They already know this, or are very, very close to it, what the deficit was, how much the revenues were, and how much the spending was. So in about 10 days, hopefully, or less, actually, we should know it by next Thursday, but I don't think that report is going to be issued. I think the earliest we're going to see it is when we have an agreement as to what the national debt ceiling will be increased to. And the only thing that's debatable is when. The government is going to be opened up and the national debt ceiling is going to be increased. The only question is when. But the bigger problem is, whenever that point in time is, we have not, neither political party has confronted the fact that we have not balanced the budget and are continuing to run these massive deficits. You see, neither political party has the leadership. It doesn't have the will. It doesn't have really the understanding. It doesn't have the vision. It doesn't have the courage to step up the plate and tell the American people what the problem is. Intuitively, the American people know the government is spending too much money. Now, they might not be able to put a number to it, but they know that. Deep down, they know that is the situation. And deep down, they know what the House, the Senate, and the President should be doing is dramatically cutting spending. Neither political party, neither the House nor the Senate or the President, is doing that. They're not doing what's called the heavy lifting. They don't want to go near it. You see, our representatives are followers. They're followers. They're not leaders. That's the problem, or one of the problems. And when you got a bunch of followers, they're scared. And they should be scared. I'm absolutely irate of the sheer magnitude and arrogance of the predicament the American people are facing today. What puzzles me is most of these people have children or grandchildren or great-grandchildren. And who are they hurting? They're hurting those children, their grandchildren, and their great-grandchildren. They're also hurting people that are alive today. And there seems to be no sense of urgency, no courage at all to step up to the plate on them. And what do we have on television? The media's hands aren't clean on this. They have a clock on CNN. How many days has the government shut down? Let me put in a little perspective, the magnitude of the problem. It's been estimated that approximately 800,000 of the federal employees are considered non-essential. Those are the people that were furloughed and sent home. They're not working. And as far as I'm concerned, if you're not working, you don't get paid for it. And even when we call you back, you shouldn't get paid for it. that's not the way it works. The essential employees will definitely be getting paid for what they work, but what Congress does and has done in the past, it pays those furloughed non-essential employees that didn't work the money for the time they spent at home. Gee, isn't that nice? I used to work for a company that if you didn't work, you didn't get paid, and that's most companies. We didn't have sick days. So a lot of companies, large companies, have it, but small companies, it's very simple. If you don't work, you don't get paid because the owner can't afford sick pay. He can barely afford to pay you what you're worth, and if you don't work, you don't get paid. That's the private sector, folks. It's not large corporations. Your large, medium-sized corporations, they have a number of sick days. They have a number of legal holidays, a number of sick days. I'll tell you the way it is in small business. You don't get paid for holidays, and you don't get paid for sick days. You get paid when you work. So if you don't work, you don't get paid. And that really should be the rule in the federal government. That's not the way it's done. It's not the way it's done. Any bets out there? I'll tell you what's going to happen. After the government is opened up again, not only will those essential employees that actually work get paid, they should get paid. They were working. But all those furloughed employees that were told to go home and stayed home are going to get paid. Isn't that a sweet deal? You watch. That's exactly what's going to happen. Doesn't matter whether Republicans or the Democrats control it. It's only fair. They wanted to work, but Congress didn't pass a continuing resolution. It's only fair. Let me tell you what's only fair. If you don't work, you don't get paid. That's fair. And who's paying this bill? You and I. We're the suckers. We're the chumps here. And we let our representatives get away with this nonsense. Now, I'm leading up to something. Assume for a minute. Now, this is not going to happen. But I want to put it in perspective. Assume for a minute those 800,000 so-called non-essential employees, the ones that are been furloughed and are sitting home right now. And to be fair to them, they would like to be working. Nah, I think some of them are having a good time because they know what's going to happen. They're going to get paid. But assume we had a Congress that said, listen, we need to quickly balance the budget. We're going to open the government. We'll open up for business. But we won't ask those non-essential employees to come back to work. Sorry, we have a budgetary restraint here, and we figured out that 800,000 employees cost the federal government, when you add their salary, when you add the health, their employee benefits such as health insurance and retirement benefits, and expenses associated with employing a specific employee, on average, sometimes it's higher, sometimes it's lower, but the average cost or savings is about $100,000 per employee. Yeah, some of them make less money, some get more, but when you add up their salaries, their health insurance, contributions to retirement plans, and also, you know, they need to come in and have an office and all that. All that costs money. Well, that would mean if they were let go, permanently furloughed, a permanent all non-essential employees are now no longer working for the federal government. They've been let go. 800,000. Sucks to be them, doesn't it? They got to find a job. They got to find a job in the real world. But why do this? You know, you can hear the sob stories on television. Haven't you noticed all the sob stories? I can't be furloughed. I need the money now. It doesn't cut. I won't shed one tear for them. Why? Join the private sector. It happens every day. People get laid off. I don't hear many sob stories on any major network about what's happening in the private sector. It's all about these poor government bureaucrats. They've been furloughed. They can't work. They're sitting home. No mention of the fact that those 800,000 employees, you multiply that by $100,000, and what number do you get? You get $800 billion. $800 billion, and that's probably low. That's how much money the government could save in one fiscal year if these 800,000 so-called non-essential employees were permanently terminated. That would go a long way towards balancing the budget. Now, I know some of you are saying, you're an extremist. You're a Tea Party member. How dare you? Excuse me. I'm paying the bills, and you're the ones that are spending year in, year out, these massive deficits of over $1 trillion. Hello? Who's an extremist? Who's fiscally irresponsible? Who's fiscally insane? You are, not me. I'm the prudent one here. I'm the responsible person here. You people are addicted. You're addicted to spending. You have spending addiction disorder. You have a bad habit that's getting worse. You need to go cold turkey. How do you go cold turkey? I'll tell you. Guess what? 800,000 non-essential workers stay home. You're permanently terminated. You're fired. Don't come back. Or come back for an hour and clean out your desk. We can't afford you anymore. Go get a job where you're productive, where you're producing goods and services. Because most of what the federal government does is redistribute income from one group to another. It's wealth redistribution. The government is huge, huge. At one time, the total federal government was less than 3% of gross domestic product. Today, it's over 21%, and actually was heading towards 25%. It actually has come down. Historically, tax revenues, total tax revenues, have been about 18% for the post-World War II period. We have a Congress, whether it's the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, that have a terrible habit that is destroying America, that is destroying jobs. And what has America become? It has become a warfare and welfare state. A warfare and welfare state. We used to be a peace and prosperity economy. Not any longer. About half of the Americans are dependent today on a government check. And that includes Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, Section 8 housing, supplemental income, food stamps, you name it. That's not the America that was peaceful and prosperous. What has happened is both political parties want to make the American people dependent on government. And where has that led? It has led to the situation we were at today. Yes, short term, the United States won't default. But if we continue on down this road, we will default, as much as we don't want to. Our representative, and it's we're to blame. We, the American people, are to blame. Why? We're not paying attention. We're not paying attention as to what's going on, and we're not active enough to change the situation. I have listened to literally a dozen talk show hosts And many of them are conservatives. Some are libertarian, but many are conservatives that are committed to the two-party system. And we need to change the Republican Party. They've given up on the Democratic Party, and I would give up on them. They have more than a bad habit. They're about ready to OD. If they ever got their way, they would OD. They would take this country and flush it down the toilet as quick as they could. You don't start a new entitlement program such as Obamacare in the present situation, where you have massively high unemployment rates and massively high debt. In other words, you can't, the government literally can't pay its bills, so it has to borrow. That's why they will increase the debt ceiling. It is time that someone in Congress, the House or the Senate or both, stand up and say, we can't continue doing this. We have to go cold turkey. We're going to have to start closing down federal departments. And let me make clear. Yes, we could save $1 trillion or near $1 trillion by permanently laying off the so-called non-essential employees. Am I recommending that? No, I'm not recommending that. That's too crude an approach. They would say that's a meat axe approach. And I would agree with them. What we should do is start closing down federal departments. Oh, they would have a fit on that. We can't do that. The dirty secret is the bureaucrats and the politicians and the people the politicians work for, the so-called ruling elite, are against the will of the American people. That is why more and more people are leaving the Democratic Party and leaving the Republican Party. A plague on both parties. They're not listening, as Ted Cruz said, they're not listening. They are bankrupting this country in the long run. Not immediately, but in the long run, definitely. Because what's going to happen is, instead of $35 billion, when this debt time bomb goes off, it'll quickly go to $70 billion and $100 billion. And that's when they really are going to get scared. And they're going to come screaming, we have to increase the debt ceiling. No, what you have to do is stop spending money that the American people literally do not have. And stop burdening your children, your grandchildren, your great-children, great-grandchildren. No one is standing up and shouting that. Because if they did, they would immediately be demonized by the mainstream media. You are an extremist. You are an anarchist. You are a Tea Party member. Excuse me? I'm asking you to balance the budget, and I'm an extremist, and you can't do it? Neither Republicans or Democrats cannot balance the budget. Can you believe that? I can't. Now, I know why they can't balance it. They're always spending more and more money than their government spending is out of control. They don't look at the numbers. You know what's really sad? Most, not all, of the people in Congress really, truly don't understand the magnitude of the problem. They don't understand the urgency of the problem. And a lot of them are completely clueless as to what needs to be done and quickly to correct the problem. Instead, we have on CNN how many hours the government has been shut down. What they should be saying, and I've sort of figured this out, every day, if we don't pay those furloughed workers, we're saving the taxpayers, my back-of-the-envelope estimate is $2.2 billion. $2.2 billion. And in a week, we save approximately $15 billion. And a month, we will save over $60 billion. And a year, we'll be right at about $800 billion. Gee, how much of the deficit would that reduce? It would really take it from roughly 900 billion right down to about 100 billion. And that's why I'm using that example. I'm not recommending that as the approach, but you get to the same answer by starting to shut down permanently federal departments. Now, that's not going to completely solve the problem, ladies and gentlemen, because the major drivers of these deficits are entitlement programs, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, as well as welfare programs. Don't forget those. What I'm trying to say is there's no silver bullet here. Yes, you can't take the meat axe approach and tell the 800,000 non-essential employees not to come back. That would be irresponsible. But I'm year after year after year, whether it's Republicans when they control both houses in the presidency, when it's the Democrats when they control both houses, or when it's mixed, we get the same addiction problem. Just like people are addicted to alcohol, gambling, sex, drugs, cigarettes, you name it, we have a so-called representative republic where the representatives, the Senate, senators are addicted to spending well beyond the means of the American people. And no one has the courage to stand up and say, enough is enough. You're gonna have to kick this habit by going cold turkey. You can either do it in an orderly way, or we'll take the meat axe approach and tell the 800,000 furlough employees you're permanently fired. That is what it would take to approach a balanced budget. No one is recommending that. I'm not recommending that. What I am pleading for is some leadership, not followship, leadership, to come up with a 3 to 4 year plan at the end of which the budget is balanced. That's not hard to understand. And the reasoning for it is you can't keep doing what you're doing. You're going to kill yourself. In this case, you're going to kill the goose that lays the golden eggs. And that's the private sector. That's the private sector. If you're wondering why the private sector, namely the small new businesses, are responsible for about 2 out of 3 new jobs. If you add the mid-sized companies, over 80% of the new jobs are created by them. And they're not hiring. They're not expanding. And there's a reason for it. One of the reasons is Obamacare. The other reason, they're seeing these massive deficits, and they know what's coming. What's coming is a big tax bill. Either that, or they're going to hide the tax increase by inflation. That's a hidden tax, but it accomplishes the same thing. And you do it by issuing debt, have the Federal Reserve buy it, and ultimately you're going to have inflation that reduces the value of the purchasing power of the dollar. In other words, the people that are suckers that buy the Treasury securities will find out that when they get the interest payment, it buys a lot less. And you can do it by simply having inflation at 2 or 3% or 4% a year. That'll do the job. And that's exactly what they're doing. And we have people in the Congress, both in the House and the Senate. Most of them don't understand it. They don't understand the problem. They don't understand how urgent it is. They don't understand the consequences of continuing to do it. And believe me, they don't have the courage or the vision to do anything about it. You got to first know you have a problem. We have deep denial on really both political parties. That's why I've given up on either party. We need a third party. I call it the Independent Party. One time I called it the American Citizens Alliance Party, ACAP, to emphasize we need to put a cap on spending. I think a more simpler name, call it the Independent Party. And the principle of the Independent Party, there'd be several, but one is you have to balance the budget, and two, you have to budget to last year's tax revenues. That would go a long way to stopping this. But the reason why you need entitlement reform is the problem is going to get worse and worse without it. We today have unfunded liabilities of over $100 trillion, primarily for Social Security and Medicare. Those are promises that will never be kept. They can't be kept. They can't be funded. The money's not there. And every day there are estimates of 10,000-plus baby boom generations that are retiring. The problem is going to grow bigger and bigger. In other words, the unfunded liabilities. I'm not talking the debt. The debt is only a little under $17 trillion. That's the tip of the iceberg. And that is a major problem in and of itself. But a far bigger problem is the so-called unfunded liabilities that are growing anywhere from $3 to $5 to $7 trillion, depending on who you want to believe. Actuaries have estimates. And that's relentless, because why? People were promised that when they reach a certain age, such as 66 or 67, that depending on how much money they contributed or earned and contributed to Social Security, they will get a benefit starting full benefit at either age 66 or 67, a monthly benefit. So the more you contributed, the more benefit you have. The less benefit, the less your Social Security check. And then starting at age 65, you're eligible for Medicare. Sounds good to me. There's a problem. It's a pay-as-you-go system. The people that are paying for it now are paying for the benefits of the people that are on Social Security or in Medicare. And what's happened is the number of workers to retirees is now under 3. I've done a little checking. It is under 3. And that's a problem. Because what's going to have to happen is you need basic entitlement reform. And guess who? You don't think the Democrats, they don't even want to talk about opening the government, or they don't want to negotiate. What they don't want to talk about at all are these entitlement programs. What I'm talking about is reforming them so people at least get paid something. But if something's not done about these programs, most people will end up with nothing. Not tomorrow, not next year, probably not in 10 years. And that's why I say, who do this primarily hurts? Your children, your grandchildren, and your great-grandchildren. The burden, the debt burden, and the unfunded liability burden is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I support a representative republic, but that requires two important things: that the people that I choose and vote for not only understand the problem, forget about denying the problem, understand the problem, and try to work out solutions that will address it, and I'm not seeing it. I am not seeing it from either political party. That's why I'm saying you need a third party. Forget about the Republican Party. Why fight them? You know, half of them are progressives, are big interventionist government status. If you run as a Republican today, you're fighting not only your Democratic opponent, but you're also fighting the press, the media. But if you're a responsible Tea Party Republican, you're also fighting the Republican establishment, the so-called ruling elite in Washington. And they fought Ted Cruz. They didn't want Ted Cruz. And you see why. And they're trying to demonize him. The problem is we need 435 Teds in the House and 100 in the Senate, not one senator from Texas crying in the wilderness. You see, what the ruling elite is afraid of is people are listening to Ted Cruz. But we need more than a Ted Cruz or a Rand Paul or a Mike Lee. We need several hundred in the House and at least 60 in the Senate. We don't have the numbers. And why fight the Republican Party establishment that's going to fight you every inch of the way? They're not for changing the situation. We had George Bush in charge. We had the House. The Republicans had the House and the Senate. What did they do? They ran up the debt. They ran it up. They ran up deficits, and they ran up the debt. And yes, it was less than Obama, but Obama's a world, you know, he's setting world records here. It's more than double, in some years triple, what George Bush did. He's just at several orders of magnitude worse. But they're both cut from the same cloth. They believe in big interventionist government, and they're statist. They're bigs. They believe in intervention, both domestically and abroad. So, yeah, you can play the game, you know, throw the bums out, but that's a sucker's game because there's not much difference between either political parties if you really look at it. That's the problem. And that's why, as far as I'm concerned, forget about the Democratic Party. They are entirely hopeless. That's like a big heroin addict that keeps increasing the dosage. That's where they're at. They're junkies, folks, and they're junkies on spending. They're not only spending more than the American taxpayers can support, they're now taxing your children and grandchildren, and you're letting them get away for it. You're falling for their sob stories. We care more. We care more. No, they don't. If they cared, they'd balance the budget. If they cared, they would reduce the debt. Are they talking about that? No, they're not. What are they talking about? More and more government spending. And more taxes. Who do you think is going to pay the taxes? The rich? Wake up. It's you and me. It's the middle class. They play a game of class warfare, divide and conquer. And play on your emotions. Now, more and more Americans are waking up and getting mad. First, they're going to get real mad, real outrage. But then they're going to start to march. They're going to start to organize. But they need to take it a step further. They need to have a political party that's going to say a plague on the Democratic and Republican Party. What we believe is in fiscal responsibility. What we believe in is a representative republic. What we believe in is the Constitution of the United States. And that means our budgets must be balanced and must be limited to the capability of the American people to pay the taxes. And that requires radical downsizing of the federal government. It means shutting down eight federal departments. I didn't say furlough people. I'm saying shut them down. We don't need them. The American people in the private sector are perfectly capable of building houses and apartments, cars, trucks, bicycles, electricity, gasoline. We know how to form business and grow business. We don't need labor unions. We don't need subsidies to grow food. What I'm talking about is eliminate the Department of Agriculture, eliminate the Department of Commerce, eliminate and shutter the Department of Labor, the Department of Education, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, the Department of Energy, the Department of Transportation. I've always missed one or two. What will be left? Treasury, State, Department of Defense, and Department of Justice. The rest need to be shut down. And for your veterans out there, we'll pay you off. We'll give you the insurance that you need so you can go to any doctor in any hospital. We don't need a bureaucracy, the Veterans Administration will provide you with the insurance coverage to select the doctor near you or the hospital near you for your military service. This would drastically cut the size of the federal government. We could probably eliminate not 800,000 federal employees, but probably 1 million. And that's just the start, but a good start to getting our house in order and our budgets balanced. And that's what we'll be talking about for the next several weeks. And we need to be talking about them. But neither political party is up to it. This is really, some describe it kabuki. It's theater. It's drama. We have a bunch of drama queens. Oh, we're going to default on the debt. No, we're not. And yes, after a certain amount of fireworks and digging in their heels and rhetoric, what's going to happen? The government's going to be opened again, and the debt ceiling is going to be increased. And have we really moved forward in solving the most pressing problems of the United States? No, we haven't. The unemployment rate will still be high. The growth rate in the economy will still be low. And the debt will be growing and growing, as will the unfunded liabilities. That's the bad news. What's the good news? The good news is the opportunity. You need to get involved. I don't know what your skills are. I don't know what your understanding of the problem is. But I know everyone deep down understands somewhere along the way, the American Republic, our United States of America, has lost its way. We've turned into something that, frankly, I wish we never were, namely a warfare and welfare state. We really need to be a peace and prosperity economy. And what that means is limited constitutional government and a massive downsizing of the federal government. That's the responsible thing to do. That is the right thing to do. And it needs to be done as soon as possible. That's the urgent thing that needs to be done. And the only way it's going to be accomplished is we have to organize and become a political force, which means we have to start another political party. I'm suggesting we call it the Independent Party, but a party of principle, where we nominate people of principle that will not sell out to the highest bidder once they're in Congress, whether it's the House or the Senate. Most of our politicians today of both political parties are bought and paid for. And that's sad to say. They are not looking out for the general welfare of the United States. Because if they would, we would never be in this financial situation of massive deficits year in, year out, under Republicans and Democrats, leading into massive debt and massive unfunded liabilities. I'm looking at the time. I got about a minute. I will say next week we'll probably be discussing the national debt ceiling and the fact I'm hoping some reasonable people will get the government back to work, namely the government will be reopened, and that's going to be a compromise. I would personally think you need to make some significant changes, and the only levers that the Republicans have is that debt ceiling. But they know, and I know, you're going to have to increase it. Remember, at least a third of every dollar that the federal government is spending today has to be financed by debt, which means the debt ceiling has to go up. I'm not recommending that, but it has to go up. Because if you don't raise the ceiling, what do you have to do? You have to stop spending, dramatically stop spending. And what I suggest, one possibility, permanently furlough those 800,000. Nobody is suggesting that. But that's how dire the situation is, and it's going to get worse. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at Richland College or the DCCD. Thank you for listening. Have a good weekend. If you're a student, please do your homework and stay tuned for my show Monday. Have a great day. Bye. Back to the music.